नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 1 Chapter 17 Text 9 Punishment and Reward of Kali. Surabe yatra socho Masurabe yatra socho
Masurabe yatra
socho Yetu te vasala payam Yetu te Vasalat Bayam Marodhir Amba Badramte Marodhir Amba Badramte Kalanam Mai Sastari Kalanam Mai Sastari Masurabhyatra socho Vayate Vasalabhayam Marodhiram Babadramte Kalanam Mai Shastari Ma Do not Surabaya, O son of Surabhi, Atra, in my kingdom, Sucha, lamentation, Yetu, let there be, Te, your, Risalat, by the Sudra, Vayam, cause of fear, Ma, do not. Rohi, cry. Amba, mother cow. Badram, all good. Te, unto you. Kalanam, of the envious. Mayi, while I am living. Shastari, the ruler or subduer. Translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. O son of Surabhi, you need lament no longer now. There is no need to fear this low-class sudra. And, O mother cow, as long as I am living as the ruler and subduer of all envious men, there is no cause for you to cry. Everything will be good for you. Translation responsively. O son of Surabhi, you need lament no longer now. There is no fear. There is no need to fear. This low class sudra. And O mother cow, as long as I am living, as the ruler and subduer of all envious men, there is no cause for you to cry. Everything will be good for you. The fourth by His Divine Grace of Prabhupada. Protection of the bulls and cows and all other animals can be possible only when there is a state ruled by an executive head like Maharaj Parikshit. Maharaj Parikshit addressed the cow as mother, for he is a cultured twice-born Kshatriya king. Surabhi is the name of the cow which exists in the spiritual planets and are especially reared by Lord Sri Krishna himself. As men are made after the form and feature of the Supreme Lord, so also the cows are made after the form and feature of the Surabhi cows in the spiritual kingdom. In the material world, the human society gives all protection to human beings, but there is no law to protect the descendants of Surabhi, who can give all protection to men by supplying the miracle food, milk. But Maharaj Parikshit and the Pandavas were fully conscious of the importance of the cow and the bull and they were prepared to punish the cow killer with all chastisement, even including death. There has sometimes been agitation for the protection of the cow, but for want of pious executive heads and suitable laws, the cow and the bull are not given protection. Human society should recognise the importance of the cow and the bull and thus give all protection to these important animals. Following in the footsteps of Maharaj Parikshit, for protecting the cows and the Brahminical culture, the Lord, who is very kind to the cows and the Brahmanas, Gobramanya Hitayacha, will be pleased with us and will bestow upon us real peace. Omagana Timiranda Shyaganjana Shalakaya Chakshura Militam Mena Tasma Shri Gurave Namaha. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimati Hridayananda Goswaminiti Namane. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namane. Namaste Saraswati Devam Gauravani Pacharini Nevisesha Shunivari Pashachada Sitarini. Vancha Kalpa Taruvyascha Kripa Sindhu Bayevacha Patitadam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasati Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So this is a very interesting section of the Srimad Bhagavatam, quite pertinent in today's society. Cow protection is a very important part of the Krishna Conscious Platform, and this is what we're trying to establish. It's a hard program to enact and to happen. Today is Ekadasi. Just to let you know, it's Ekadasi, so it's a great time, an auspicious time for us to make advancement. If we want to chant some extra, if we want to fast in different ways, obviously we all fast from grains, but if people want to fast for the full day, that's also very good. If we want to chant some extra rounds, it's good. So this is a great opportunity to make some advancement. Here it was pointed out about the Sarabi cow. I had a great opportunity when I was in Vrindavan. I don't know if anybody else has ever had this happen to them, but I was with a Maharaj and we were travelling back to Delhi. And in Vrindavan, sometimes you can see a Sarabi cow. And there was on the horizon. Has anybody ever seen a Sarabi cow? Sarabi cow is like sort of taller than a normal cow. Have you ever seen it in Vrindavan, Prana? The blue cow? Yeah. They're sort of more like a horse than a cow, aren't they? They're sort of bigger. Amazing animal. They're very, very shy. It's really interesting to see. So the Sarabi cow, our mother, is very, very important. So today's talk, I wanted to talk a little bit about leadership and protection. And the classes over the last few days have taught us the need for good leadership. And it's especially important in the age of Kali that we have good leadership. In one sense, this is an awful age. We all know that. Kali Yuga is an awful age. But in another sense, it's a great age of deliverance because we have Krishna in the form of his holy name. And we know from the instructions of the Shastra that actually there is a dawning of a new age, a Satvic age, that is upon us. So within that dawning, there will come good leadership. So I wanted to question a few things. How do we achieve good leadership in today's society? How do we, as devotees, how can we instill good leadership? I know we would like it immediately, but that's going to take some time. But if anybody has at all read any of the newspapers this week, as far as politics is concerned, anybody been aware of what's going on? There's been great upheaval as far as our Prime Minister is concerned, and there's backfighting and backstabbing and people wanting to take over power, and it's just a mess. Politically, it's a mess. And so this is what's happening. There's no good leadership. Now, the other question is, how can Krishna consciousness make a difference to the quality of today's leadership? Krishna consciousness is actually the motivating factor that's going to change this Kali Yuga into Satya Yuga. Some questions that are raised, if we are to be at all effective, how do we achieve this change in leadership? Do the devotees enter into politics? Would you think that devotees should enter into politics? What do you think? Yeah. Prabhupada actually encouraged some of the devotees when he was on the planet encouraging different devotees to take up political life, and to actually he pointed to one person, what was his name, Prabhu? I've forgotten his name. No, not Rameshwara. He said something to Rameshwara as well, but there was another devotee. I just forgot his name. And he said that he should become President of the United States. So Prabhupada was definitely also very much thinking, you know, outside the box, that we could become Prime Minister and President. So politics is something, in one sense there is talk, you know, the devotees don't get involved in politics, but in another sense we should get involved in politics in one way or another. How effective would it be to preach to today's leaders? You know, if we get opportunities, how effective would it be? Very effective. Very effective. We saw recently Prana Prabhu had the opportunity of meeting with the Prime Minister of New Zealand, who visited our school in Auckland, and it was very effective. They struck up a good rapport. Him and Kalasambara actually got on like a house on fire, apparently. Isn't that right, Prana? And they were two peas in a pod, they were joking with one another, and there was a camaraderie, there was a feeling of goodwill. So these things are very much necessary. Also, we had recently, we had that Radhanath Swami met with the President of the United States, who is inclined towards Vedic culture. He's inclined towards Vedic culture, and he was very receptive in meeting Maharaj. It is noted that actually when he first was going for the elections to be the President of the United States, wherever he went, he carried a small statue of Lord Ganesh everywhere he went. So there is room for growth and happening. So it's very important that actually devotees get an opportunity to preach to today's leaders. And some people may say, well, is it worth it? Yes, it's worth it. I mean, recently we had the Australia Day Festival. And because of our efforts in doing interfaith work and so on and so forth, I mentioned it to Aniruddha and to Prabhudas. You know, when we had that procession, we were going down Swanson Street and you have all the dignitaries that sit up near the town hall. And the then Premier of Victoria was there and also the Lord Mayor. And the first person that saw me was the Lord Mayor, because I sort of stand out. And they know that I'm involved with interfaith and with the community in different ways and presenting Vedic philosophy. The first thing is the Lord Mayor pointed to me and he waved. And then the Premier saw also, it's Bhakta, you know, and he put both hands up like this and he went, Hare Krishna. I don't know if anybody saw it. I know Pauline was there and she was taking photographs. I said, did you get a photograph of that? And she just missed it. So, but unfortunately he's not Premier anymore, so we have to start the work all over again. But we want to invite these leaders into our community and get to know us. Because when they get to know the devotees, then they know, there's nothing to fear from these people. They actually may have something that we can use in our politics. The other point is, do we raise Krishna-conscious children who will be the leaders of the future? Yes, we do. This is the most important preaching that we can possibly do. The preaching is going on and we're bringing young men and women to Krishna consciousness, and that's fine. But our young children are the future of ISKCON. And it's nothing to be surprised that if one of our young children become the Prime Minister or a leader of a country in some way. This is absolutely possible. So we have to keep this in mind. So all the above are very much important. The point that I wanted to start talking about today is about utilising the elders within society. And this is something that this society, our Western materialistic democratic society, is sort of omitting. The actual use of elders, senior people, Varnashram Dhan. You know, in the true Varnashram sense, we utilise the senior people within our community. And that's what I'd like to talk a little bit about today. As far as the protection of the world's citizens is concerned, which includes animals, here are some statistics about the protection of the world's citizens. In the Australian population of 22.8 million people, in 1 month alone, more than and this is talking about cow protection, more than 624,000 cows are consumed. 624, this is in 1 month, right? 47,000 calves are consumed in 1 month. 540,000 sheep are consumed in 1 month. 1.68 million lambs are consumed in 1 month. And 382,000 pigs are consumed in 1 month in Australia. That's just in Australia. That's lives being snapped out. Over a year, it's estimated that 9 million cattle, 13 million sheep, 20 million lambs, 6 million pigs, over 500 million meat chickens are killed or killed for meat. This does not take into account the millions of turkeys, ducks, fish that are also consumed. What to speak of human lives that are slaughtered through abortions on a daily basis? This is our government in action. This is demon crazy. 43 million a year abortions happen in the world. 43 million. That is in 356 days in a year. That's 117,808 a day babies killed. This is our democratic society that we live in. This is our leadership. Here we have Parikshit Maharaj disturbed to the extent where he's taking out his sword and saying, "I'll finish this sudra off. Who has done this to your mother?" He's willing to kill this person. This is happening all over the world to these cows, to the animals, and also to the unborn. This is the society that we're living in. And there's also the slaughter of our children's minds with materialistic education, brain-sapping video games, TV, film violence, overemphasis on mundane sport. The list is endless. So this is a toxic society. This is a toxic leadership. This is a complete farce as far as leadership is concerned, because no one is safe. Here we have Parikshit Maharaj saying, guaranteeing Mother Cow, therefore I must kill them. Where are we? Which one was it again? He was saying, O Mother Cow, as long as I'm living as the ruler and subduer of all envious men, there is no cause for you to cry. Everything will be good for you. This is not happening in today's society. The problem in today's society is that we've minimized the necessity in seeking direction from so-called elders, leaders, older people, mainly because our so-called leaders are unfortunately just old, immature individuals, self-centered, immature, with no real knowledge how to lead society and no guiding force at all. Basically, society just wants to get rid of our old people. You know, it's now a young person's world. If you go to the corporate world, if you're anything over 40 or 50, you're no longer part of the scene. If you're in corporate, in IT, those gentlemen that are, and ladies that are working in IT, you know when you get to a certain age, you start to worry. Am I going to be replaced? Am I going to be made redundant for the young guy that's coming up, who's brighter and smarter, or so they think? So everybody's living on edge. It is a young person's world. Old people are discarded, put away. They can't offer anything to society. We'll just put them in an old person's home. Or send them off to the Gold Coast. Yeah, you know what they call the Gold Coast, don't you? Heaven's waiting room. That's what they call it, heaven's waiting room. People are just waiting to die. And while they're waiting to die, they're living off their superannuation, the money that they've accrued, and they're learning lawn bowls. They roll a ball down a piece of grass. Or they play golf. Roll a ball on a piece of grass. This is their old age. This is what they've got to offer. So young people think they have nothing to offer. Get rid of them. There's even thoughts about euthanasia. In Europe at the moment, you know, if a person gets to a certain age and there's some infirmity or some illness, let's just get rid of them, out of the scene. So it's a young people's world. And Vedic scriptures provide very interesting information in regards to honouring the elders in society. That was a major institution within Varnashram Dham. And Srila Prabhupada so much wanted to institute Varnashram into society. A major point of Varnashram Dham was to provide honoring the elders of society, something that is unique and very, very rarely found in other societies. Within indigenous cultures, you still see that the elders have some standing. You know, like even in the Aboriginal culture here in Australia, the elders are held to some sort of level of esteem. They'll talk to the elders of a tribe, so on and so forth. And the Westerners can't understand this. The materialists can't understand. Why are you consulting this old man or this old woman? And they even call their elders uncle or auntie. The lady that is the leader of the Aboriginal community here in Melbourne is a lady, Auntie Anna, I think. A really nice lady, and she has a certain amount of knowledge. So there's no understanding of how important the elders are within the society. So in Vedic culture, that was definitely there. And honouring or respecting one, an elder, consisted of saluting a person, rising to welcome a person, him or her, allowing the respected person to walk in front, garlanding a person. Respect. There is so much controversy at the moment and so much topics of discussion, if you listen to talkback radios and so on and so forth, about respect in our society. The level of respect within our society is going to a rock bottom level, especially here in Australia. There is no respect for our politicians. There's no respect for our teachers. There's no respect for our parents or relatives or anything. It is just a declining civilization. And so this Varnashram has to be instituted. The grounds on which a person has to be respected or honoured are that they have spiritual knowledge. From a Varnashram point of view, we have to have, as a senior person, has to have spiritual knowledge. They are able to perform ritualistic spiritual rites like deity worship, yajnas, different ceremonies. They have to be of a certain age. They're elderly. They're relationships of ours. They have material knowledge. They know how to do things. And somehow wealthy because of their accumulation of wealth and pious accruement over the years. So when a person is highly knowledgeable, like a Brahmin within the Vedic culture, or a senior Vaishnava, or whose relationship demands respect and approach from another, then the latter should always rise and show respect to the former in a manner given in the scriptures. So we offer always respect to the elders. This is very much important. This is some of the qualities that Krishna consciousness will give to society. In the Manu Shastras, Manu says that the pranas, or vital breaths of a person, so their health, actually mounts upwards. If you get better, you become healthier. When a person who is superior in any of the grounds mentioned above approaches, so if you honour a person who is elderly, who has these qualities, it's actually healthy for you to do that. He says here, Manu says, by rising and respecting such a senior person, one recovers and subsides the prana. Further, he says, a person who has the habit of constantly saluting the superior person properly gains increased length of life, knowledge, fame, strength, as such a person's body and mind will be well tuned at all times and will be put to optimum use. So this is the Manu Shastras. So by respecting the seniors, we actually gain health. That is where leadership issue comes, has gone amiss in today's society. And we, as the Krishna Consciousness Society, can actually benefit society by introducing this again. By first living it ourselves, being very respectful for our senior members, and also to actually show that to others. Srila Prabhupada's purport in the Bhagavad Gita in the first chapter in text, verse 39, states this, and I quote Srila Prabhupada, "In the system of the Varnashram institution, there are many principles of religious tradition to help members of the family grow properly and attain spiritual values. Elder members are responsible for such purifying processes in the family, beginning from birth to death. So from the very start of your life, the elders have a great part to play in the growth of a child. But on the death of an elder member, such family traditions of purification may stop, and the remaining younger family members may develop irreligious habits and thereby lose their chance for spiritual salvation. Therefore, for no purpose should the elder member of the family be slain. So this was at that time of the Battle of Kurukshetra, where Arjuna is lamenting that he has to kill the people in front of him. From the Shastras, we now read that Krishna, the eternal primeval Lord of the universe, who is complete in himself and who is Sarvakarana Karanam, humbly received the simple Brahmana Sudama the Brahmana, who was an older man, and welcomed him into his kingdom, sat him on his throne, washed his feet, because he was a senior Vaishnava. So this is the etiquette, this is the protocol. So humans' propensity depends on Brahminical culture and cow protection, as this verse has mentioned. You know, the whole of society depends on Brahminical culture and cow protection. Preservation of the Brahminical culture and cow protection in the absence of God consciousness. So when you have Brahminical culture and cow protection in the absence of God consciousness, Prabhupada says, is like a beautiful body without a soul. Thus, completely useless. So there has to be God consciousness within the Brahminical and cow protection. It is a king or administrator's duty to create a conducive atmosphere for Vedic civilization to prosper by promoting Brahminical culture, cow protection, and God consciousness. So the spiritual leader will do those three. Will have cow protection, Brahminical culture, and God consciousness, teaching the public about Krishna, about God. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, Los Angeles, in 1974, Prabhupada says, real Brahmanas are like the brain of society. They teach the younger generation in the Gurukuls and even advise kings. This is why we need true Brahmins in a country. They will impart education, which will restore the Vedic values in society and help the leaders imbibe discrimination between what is right and what is wrong. At the moment, they don't know what is right and what is wrong. They have no idea of the sinful activities that are going on with this mass murder of animals and living entities. The next question, Prabhupada says, comes how to create Brahmins in a country where there has been total delinking of the past and the structure has collapsed. Welcome the Kali Yuga. The whole thing has collapsed. Prabhupada goes on to describe, while everything is happening just as prophesied about Kali Yuga, everything is prophesied, it said that this would happen, still there is hope, Prabhupada says. This is very, very important. Prabhupada says, still there is hope. So in this Varnashram system, this is the legacy that, in a sense, Prabhupada has left us. How to instill, he said, half my work is done, the other half is to develop Varnashram. So that is now left up to us. How do we instill Varnashram into society? How do we get good leadership? How do we get respect back into society? So there are two parts. The Varnashram system points out that there are two parts in a human's life. There is the first part where one is learning, and that is in youth. And then there's the second part where one is an elderly person and can teach, can present, can learn. And actually, it's interesting, one of the students of Vedic culture, Carl Jung, also says the same thing. There are two halves in one's life. The first part of life, the individual strives to create a proper container, he says, for one's life and asks essential questions. And this applies to everyone, both devotees and for ourselves. So in the first part of life, we ask specific essential questions about life. The first one is, what makes me significant? What makes me significant when you're in this world? Who am I? All of us, as young people, have asked, who am I really? What am I supposed to do with my life? What's my purpose? What's my career? Do I have physical appeal? Is my body okay? So many things. What's my worth in society? What am I actually here for? These sort of things are perplexing every young person as they grow up, and many more things as well. A devotee is the same thing. When we come to devotional service as a young person, we still have these thoughts. What's my position within this movement? How do I fit in within this movement? What is my long-term service? Am I going to be doing book distribution for the whole of my life? Am I going to be working at the restaurant? So many things are perplexing us. How long will it take before I become a pure devotee? How long will it take? I remember when I was very first couple of years in devotional service, we were thinking, how long will it take before we actually are God-conscious, self-realized? Will it be 10 years? Maybe 10 years. If we follow this process, will it be 20? 30 years? Well, it's 35 years and we're still thinking, how long will it be? It's coming. So am I capable of this task of staying true to my vows that I've made? You know, am I capable of following the principles for the whole of my life? These are perplexing questions for all young people. And more. The second question is that comes up to every young person's life is, how will I support myself? How will I support myself? How do I make money once you've finished the education system? How do I make money? What career am I going to have? Even at a very early age at school, we're asked, what would you like to be in the future, Johnny? Oh, I'd like to be a fireman, I'd like to be an army soldier, I'd like to be a doctor, I'd like to be this and that. So they're focusing on what will be your career. So this is again perplexing, essential questions. How will I support myself? Will I be able to have superannuation? Can I put something aside for my little nest egg at the end? Will I get promotions? I need success at all costs. Within material society now, and those of you that are working, know how important it is to get promotions and to climb up the corporate ladder. So important. What about the legacy of my children? What can I leave my children? How can I do the best for my children? How can I pay my taxes and my life insurance? So many different things are there that are perplexing the individual and are essential questions. As a devotee, we have similar questions as we're growing. How do I maintain myself in my ashram? You know, am I happy as a brahmachari? Am I happy as a brahmacharini? Should I move out? Should I do this? Should I? So many things are going on in our minds. What is my long-term service? You know, am I going to be happy being a receptionist here at the temple for the rest of my life? Am I going to be happy serving at Gopal? Same sort of thing. These are all perplexing questions as we're growing. And we have to deal with these essential questions. Who will look after me if I fall ill? Or in my old age, am I going to be looked after? So they're perplexing. Will I bloop? Will I become covered so much as I leave? You know, these are perplexing questions. Do I have faith in Krishna fully? How could I manage in this material world if I left Krishna consciousness? All these things are perplexing. So that's the other point. And the third essential question is, who will go with me in this life journey? Who will go with me? And then the non-devotee will find, who's my partner, my life partner in life? I've got to search out a partner. I've got to find someone. I'll go on the dating scene. I'll go RSVP. I'll find someone, Harmony or something, get matched up somehow or another. I need a life partner. So this is perplexing. Will I meet somebody at the pub, or will I meet somebody at work? Or, you know, it's a totally engrossing, encompassing thing for a young person. I have to find a life partner. I have to find someone that I can relate to. Am I attractive enough? People become perplexed. Am I attractive enough? They look in the window and go in the gym and doing all these different things, and they get this sort of haircut. And I mean, if you look at some of the haircuts today, it's just like, yeah, are you serious? You think that looks good? But then I'm an old person, so I don't know. Will he or she leave me? When you finally find someone, you become so perplexed by thinking, will he or she leave me? Will she divorce me? Am I good enough for her? You know, so many things. Is he going to leave me? Am I going to be left alone? And then will I find someone? All these young, in that first part of life, these are all questions that are coming up. Will I make my relationship work? Who are my real friends? Are my work colleagues friends? Or these are what the materialists are thinking. The devotee has the same perplexing questions, essential questions when we're growing up. Who's my guru? I hear this so often. Who's my guru? Oh, I'm not sure, Prabhu. I like him and I like him and he's nice and he gave me some. So many perplexing questions. Who's my guru? Who's my spiritual master? What ashram am I supposed to be in? Should I remain a brahmachari? Should I remain a brahmacharini? Shall I get married? Shall I not get married? So on and so forth. What's my relationship with the deity? Do I feel any attachment to the deities? When I find a life partner, will I remain faithful? Same sort of things. Stay Krishna consciousness with the principles. So many things. To be able to learn and deal with these essential questions properly from the very beginning of life, a person needs training. And the best training is Krishna conscious training. Krishna conscious guidance. And that's where we can see how Srila Prabhupada was so serious about training Krishna conscious children. So Krishna tu Bhagavan Swayam. They have to learn that Krishna is the Supreme. It's important to develop, therefore, Krishna conscious schools. Prana Prabhu is here, who is an exemplary promoter of schooling throughout, Krishna conscious schooling throughout the world. We're very fortunate to have him here. Very, very good devotee in trying to encourage people to bring their kids up in Krishna consciousness and establish Krishna conscious schools to get proper Krishna conscious training. This is what we're just in the process of. We've got a team of devotees now that are working at getting a Krishna conscious school here in Melbourne. Here in Melbourne, for all the kids that come. You see here on Saturday nights and Friday nights, it's a menagerie of kids. Kids everywhere. They're popping out of the woodwork, they're jumping out of trees, they're coming out of everywhere. It's just amazing. And this is a good thing. This is our Bhakta program. This is our future. These are our future leaders. But they have to have proper training. As much as possible, we don't want to send them to the slaughterhouse schools that are there in the material world. We want to give them proper Krishna conscious education. So it is important that we set up good Krishna conscious schools. Basic Krishna consciousness should also, you shouldn't just leave it up to the teachers at a gurukul, we should also have proper Krishna consciousness training by the parents. In lieu of a school, the parents are the ones that are going to be instilling Krishna consciousness to the children. We have to take time to be with our children and share Krishna consciousness with them. Don't just think and give them, what's that little video game, a video of Krishna at the moment? Krishna? Huh? Little Krishna. Don't just pop on little Krishna and put your kid in front of the video. Now he's getting Krishna consciousness. Go and wash the dishes. Now you have to also participate in his or her Krishna consciousness. You have to make it fun. You have to encourage them. And you have to respect your children that these are the future of our society. We have to nurture them with love and make them feel that Krishna consciousness is a really great thing, a really appreciating thing, you know. And they also have to see that you are enjoying your Krishna consciousness. They have to see, not that you mope about Krishna consciousness, or someone is not treating me right at the temple, or I'm not doing this right or that right. We should actually encourage them in their Krishna consciousness by showing the good example. That you enjoy chanting your rounds. That you chant your rounds properly. That they see you. That they see that mum and dad, look at dad, he's chanting so, and he's feeling such ecstasy in chanting. Look how they're worshipping the deity. See how the deity is the centre of family life. And mum and dad are so nicely worshipping the deity and worshipping their Guru Maharaj and so respectful to guests and everybody that comes. This all sinks into the growing of the child. So it's so important. So because we have to understand that they are the leaders of the future. In the various brahmacharini and brahmachari ashrams, as aspiring devotees are growing Krishna consciousness, a healthy respect to senior devotees has to be there and should be applied from the very start, emphasized. Like even you had, like, has anybody done martial arts here? Yeah? You've done martial arts? How important is respect within the martial art tradition? How important? Very, very important. Your teacher comes in. You have to offer, you can't call your teacher, your martial arts teacher, by their first name. It is offensive. You have to call them by their, whatever it is, you know, their title, isn't it? And they always offer prayers or respect. So within Krishna consciousness, this is also there. We have to offer respect to the senior devotees. It's not that they want it, but it's for your benefit that you grow from that. Respect is a very important thing. Those who are giving guidance and instruction in the Krishna consciousness, not just your guru, that we just give all respect to the guru, we do that, but also the senior Vaishnavas, that we give respect to them. The various processes of devotional service should be emphasized, revealing one's mind to other people, to other friends, close mentor, giving and receiving of gifts, being humble and affectionate to your juniors, and being a true friend to your peers. You have to develop relationships like that. And under those learning experiences, and many, many other life challenges, your learning, your Krishna conscious learning, your container of experiences will be full for the second stage of life. All those things happen in the first stage of life. In the second stage of life, all those things that you've learnt in all those different capacities will have your container full. And the task of the second part of life is quite simply to give the sum and substance of everything that you've learnt in the first part of life, your container full of experiences and priorities in your life have been to instruct, is then to instruct and mentor the younger. This is the Varnashram system, to actually give what you've learnt to the younger ones. This is very, very important. When we came to Krishna consciousness, we had hardly any senior devotees. We're practically all on the same level. But nowadays, we have this opportunity to have senior men and women that we can go to, that we can, listen, I've got a problem with my relationship or this or that, that you can talk it over with them. That's what they're there for. Don't disregard the senior people within our society. Don't disregard them. They're very, very important, and this is the part of growing. That's why you can only see and understand the early stages of life when you're older and have a wider perspective. When you're older, you become a lot more relaxed about things. It's not so imperative to find a life partner. You've got a life partner. You've been with him or her for quite some time. Okay. You know how to deal with them. It's not a big issue anymore. You know, your physical appearance isn't that important anymore. You want to stay healthy, but you're not obsessed about it. There are different things. You've learned different things about life. Money is not such an important thing anymore. Striving for something is not such an important thing. And more, most importantly, you've had that experience of Krishna consciousness. You're satisfied within yourself and your relationship with Krishna, and you can go on and carry on. So there's less pressure. This is why the Vedic culture of the past, mature societies, were led by elders, senior people, Brahmanas, Rajarishis, like Maharaj Pariksit here. This is what is happening. So, they are the true leaders within society. And without them, it's like the blind leading the blind. Prabhupada says this so often. Immature people leading immature people. And that's what we can see in today's society. We can also see it in other areas within society where there is a complete lack of mature understanding. We have the gang scene at the moment where there are young men and women, some even women, that maraud the streets of our suburbs and do violence and do graffiti and do damage to people's properties without any respect whatsoever. So this is rampant. And again, this is because there's no guiding personality. We have fanatical people that commit suicide bombings because they've been influenced and directed by envious people. So mature leaders need mature... society needs mature leaders. Immaturity leads to immature leaders, and that is the situation in today's democratic society. Demon crazy, Prabhupada stated. It's not democracy, it's demon crazy. From Plato, just as a comparison, Plato and Jefferson said, and this is a quote, "Democracy was not really the best form of government, it's just the safest. A truly wise monarch would probably be the most effective in getting things done." So that's the Vedic system. To have a benevolent, powerful monarch. So the devotees have to take up the challenge to present Krishna consciousness. That's our duty. Present and advertise the chanting, the holy name. take the role of leadership within society in so many different ways. We have to exercise our intelligence. How can we promote Krishna consciousness within our society? Every opportunity has to be seen as an opportunity to present the truth. Now, we can do it through community events. We can do it through outreach programs. In so many different ways, the devotees have to go out to the community. Even in our own neighborhood, if you make yourself known that you are doing Krishna conscious teachings, your home should become a small temple. Put a little advertisement up somewhere that you are teaching Hare Krishna Maha Mantra meditation in the milk bar or somewhere. Do something to advertise the fact that you are a devotee and that you're willing to pass knowledge on to other people. You will be surprised who will actually knock on your door to find out. Even put up a little sign saying, spiritual counselor, Hare Krishna devotee, please contact so and so and so and so. People are wanting to know the truth. We have to think of different ways in which we can actually stimulate people to come to us and learn Krishna consciousness. You know, as Prabhupada said, there is still hope. It may be the Kali Yuga, but there is still hope. We have to do things like interfaith. Obviously, this has been really successful in my work. You have to preach from your home. Invite people to your home for dinner. Really simple thing. It was one of the things that won us over to come to Krishna consciousness. The devotees asked my wife and myself to come over to their place for dinner. And they served delicious prasadam. And while we were discussing about Krishna consciousness, we saw the lifestyle that they had, and it appealed to us. And so thereby we became devotees. So you have people that you're dealing with that are non-devotees. Every one of us. If we're a grihastha, we have our next door neighbours, we have the people that we know at the mechanic or this person or the bank person. You've established a friendship. Get them to come to your home. Give them some of your association. Give them some prasadam. This is so important, and in that way we change society. We work on society. We have to be very, very patient. We have to use our intelligence. Like, say, for example, there is a program going on tomorrow. We have the Wirama Festival, and the Prime Minister may be there, so we'll get an opportunity to wave to her, and she's, oh, there's the Hare Krishna singing, you know. That's for her benefit. All the other people will also get benefit. Similarly, we had a program recently that was for the St. Kilda Youth Services here in this locality. And they asked, what can the Hare Krishnas do to help? And some of the Matajis came and they did henna. And it wasn't a big turnout, but the point was that they were the most popular people that were there at that presentation, wasn't it, Mataji? People love to get their henna done, you know. And so just by the contact of a devotee, the devotee is touching them, is doing some service for them, they felt obliged to them, and they'll have good thoughts of those devotees for the rest of their lives. So again, in a slow, patient way, we're changing society. It's interesting because Atulia is also doing a thing this week. Atulia is a council worker who works with people in Pakenhamshire, and they're doing a presentation day, and she was saying, Bhakti, what can we do? Now, unfortunately, it's in the same time as we've got the Wirama Festival, so a lot of the devotees are going over there, but she's wanting someone to do the henna over there. I don't know if you've been approached yet or not. Yeah. Are you possible to do? Or are you going to? Where are you? You're not sure? Again, it's an opportunity to actually have that contact, you know. It was unfortunate. But we should be thinking all the time, how can we do things? Yes, it is the Kali Yuga, and we need to, but everybody knows this is the age of iron and hypocrisy. We don't have to keep harping on that. We don't have to keep drawing back on it. Oh yes, Prabhu, but it's the Kali Yuga. We used to have a song that we did in the play, which was based on an old rock song. Blame it on the Kali Yuga. Remember that? So, we have to, but in the same token, we have to keep understanding that we can make a difference. We can change society. There is still hope, Prabhupada says. And yes, it's happening before our very eyes. If you actually have the eyes to see, you can see how the world is actually changing. It is slow, but it is changing. We can give all these statistics of how horrible the place is, but there is change happening. We can practically see it. Does anybody know what special week it was this week? You know how they have weeks? This is such and such a week. This is Amnesty Week. This is something. You know what week it was this week? Anybody? None of you know?
Harmony.
Huh? Harmony Day was there. That was good. Good point. Something else. The what? No, it wasn't that one. It was Meat Free Week. Meat Free Week. Yeah. The whole week there was a campaign to stop eating meat. It was presented by Animal Liberation for the specific point that, you know, they want to publicise cruelty to animals, battery farming, you know, farming animals and that sort of thing, and also to promote vegetarianism. So this never happened 10 years ago or 20 years ago. I mean, if you were classified as a vegetarian, it was like you were an oddball. I remember going to restaurants and stuff with my parents, and I was just coming to Krishna consciousness, and you would sit down and you'd ask the person, you know, I'd say, I'm sorry, I'm a vegetarian. What? You're a vegetarian? You know? Well, what did we do for you? You know, and they would bring out a plate where the chicken was in it, and so we'll just take the chicken out. This is what they used to do, you know. But now, practically every restaurant, if you go, there's a vegetarian menu for you. Not that we eat there, but I'm saying that that's there for people. So times are changing. It was a meat-free week this week. So no such thing. Now, there's some other statistics that I'd like to call on, just to show you that things are changing. In 2000. This is in 2000. They took a poll in America, and at that stage there were 4.7 million vegetarians in America, 1.7 million vegans, and this amounts to 2.5% of the adults in America were vegetarian. 2.5. So that was in 2000. 2013, that's increased enormously. And actually, scientific reports now say that by the year 2050, half the world's population will be vegetarian. Half the world's population. And not for medical reasons or health reasons, it'll be because of moral principles, that they don't want to see the slaughter of animals. That's why people are taking it up. So there is growth. There is. We have to be positive. In 2006, estimated put the number of vegetarians in the United Kingdom at 5.6% of the whole population. That's 3.5 million people were vegetarians in the UK. Overall, vegetarianism followed a steady upward curve over the past decade. In 2002, Data Monitor reported estimated that 12 million vegetarians across Europe. So there is a growing influence. And this is the influence of Srila Prabhupada, increasing in society. He started off this one little man coming off New York, Boston, just chanting Hare Krishna, one little suitcase, a couple of books, and he's changed the world. This is what's happening. A 2000 poll, yeah, I've mentioned that. 19,000 people making a healthy choice to become vegetarian a week in the United States. 19,000 people a week will change their dietary habits and become a vegetarian. So Prabhupada mentions, actually giving up meat eating is not the question of Krishna consciousness, but of civilized humanity. So vegetarianism, we don't claim ourselves to be vegetarians. You know, we're prasadarians. We like prasadam. We're not necessarily vegetarians. But Prabhupada said, being a vegetarian is the hallmark of a civilized society. So let's get the people civilized first. And when they're not killing, then they'll have the fine brain tissue to be able to understand more spiritual subject matter. That's why we, you know, encourage vegetarianism. God has given human, this is another quote from Prabhupada, God has given human society so many things to eat, nice fruits, vegetables, grain, and first-class milk. From milk, one can prepare hundreds of nutritious foods, but no one knows the art. Instead, people maintain big slaughterhouses and eat meat. They're not even civilized. When man is uncivilized, he kills poor animals and eats them. Civilized men know the art of preparing nutritious food from milk. The blood of the cow is very nutritious, but civilized men utilize it in the form of milk. Milk. Milk is nothing but the cow's blood transformed. You can make milk into so many things, yogurt, curd, ghee, clarified butter, so on. And for combining these milk products with grains, fruits and vegetables, You can make hundreds of preparations. This is civilized life, not directly killing an animal and eating its flesh. The innocent cow is simply eating grass given by God and supplying milk which we can live on. So in due course of time, and the efforts of diligence and patience, the teaching of Krishna consciousness, Vaishnava, Vaishnava culture, in all aspects of society, society will change. You'll see it, your children will also see it, but it is a slow process. Slow in one sense, but fast in another sense. And more will get real leadership, will prevail, and will rule this planet. If we have to take it as our duty to promote Krishna consciousness, we can't just be happy in our own selves. We have to in every way think of how we can promote it. From today's report, we can understand that for protecting the cows in the Brahminical culture, the Lord, who is very kind to cows and Brahmanas, will be pleased with us and will bestow upon us real peace if we institute this, if we perform this. We want Krishna to be pleased with us. So this is what's incumbent upon all of us. And each and every one of us can actually make that inroad and change society in our own way. Very little incremental steps through so many things, using our intelligence. How can we infiltrate society? How can we change the minds of people? I mentioned just a few things. There are many other things with the internet and Facebook and Twitter and so many things. We can be so instrumental in changing people's perception of how we do things. So I'll stop here. Are there any comments or questions at all?